שמעתי, אגרות, אגרות ג' letter number 3. To my friends, I've read your letters and I will answer them briefly. Generally, I've already written you that there are mitigated judgments, and to understand that in the preparation to enter the king's hall is that sometimes a person feels himself in a state of lowness, meaning that he doesn't have any Torah or work and has vain thoughts, etc. And then he is despaired, meaning he says that it is not about me to say, it is said that I am to serve my maker. But it is for people who are of high stature, meaning who have at birth good attributes and a good mind and a desire for endurance in the study of Torah. And all their business, since they are born in the world, their mind and heart is only in Torah and in the work, whereas a person of my value belongs in the cowshed. And the verse, for it is no vain thing for you, because it is your life and the length of your days, it is not about me. And sometimes there is mitigation during the awakening from the lowness, meaning that a person sees that I didn't know how much I was immersed in the nonsense of time and my futile business, and I didn't pay attention as I should have. And the poem that they say that he should be proud of me, for he desires me, for he wants me, I should say that poem too, because all of Israel has a part in the next world. Meaning that he stood and hid it for the righteous for the next world. And although I am far from the whole business, I should not be despaired and only put my trust in God, for you hear the prayer of every mouth, meaning that even though my mouth is not so okay as it should be, certainly the 13 attributes of mercy will be awakened on me as well. And from now on, I hope that I will go forward, although I have already told you oftentimes that eventually I remain in my lowness. But then he answers that there's a world, that there is a olam, shana, nefesh, world, year, soul. That these three have to be united in one place, in one time, one soul. That is why he says that certainly now is the time that I will exit all the bad situations, and he who comes to purify is aided. And he immediately begins to work more fiercely. And even when he negotiates, he doesn't feel any torments from the lowness that he sees that he was at all his life. But on the contrary, he feels during the negotiation some pleasantness and high spirits, because now the greatness that he will attain afterwards shines for him, and this is the surrounding light that shines from afar. Meaning, although he is still distant from the king's palace, meaning he still hasn't purified his vessels in order to bestow, still he gets an illumination from the light that is destined to be just in him. It turns out that this state of lowness doesn't cause him any torments at the situation, but on the contrary, he gets pleasure, and this is called the mitigation of the judgments, meaning that this situation is not so bad, and all that he doesn't look is because he doesn't look behind him to the past, but he looks ahead to the light that he will attain in the future. It turns out that if he cleaves to God in the surrounding light, but those two situations are also difficult. In those two situations, it is also difficult for a person to judge which one of them he should accept. And usually when a person is not educated in the work, then he is like a shadow, meaning sometimes he is shown from above a situation of despair, and sometimes he is shown mitigation for lowness. But still, if a person cannot choose for himself what he has to take, then he should not believe that the situation of despair is true. But he must say that this is that he cannot yet work properly, but he is in the catapult, meaning that he's thrown from above, from situation to situation. And if a person falls into the first situation, called despair, then he really is dead. And sometimes a person kills himself, meaning that he goes to a place of forgetfulness, called that he puts himself in a place of danger. And it is usually surrounding the environment that causes the situation called death. and then freedom to the dead, because a person is dead, who is dead becomes free from the mitzvot, from the commandments, meaning that he says that all the commandments that he got from his rabbis, from his teachers, did not help him. Therefore, he has no need to continue them. And the advice for it is only to go back to an environment of people who are alive, meaning people who are still continuing with the commandments they got from their teachers. And although in this situation he cannot believe that there are people among his group who have life, but he thinks that the world has grown dark on him, still that everywhere he places his eyes on, he sees, he looks at, is only heaps of bones running around before his eyes. But for one thing he can make an effort and see if the guys are still continuing the commandments of their teachers. And sometimes that he's not given even that from above. And then he can see only cunning people. That he cannot deceive himself that he's taking the right path, but he sees that his actions are not desirable. And that gives him terrible pains that he is taking the right path. I'm sorry, that whereas the other people who do not see their actual situation, or who don't even have the time to see their own lowness, therefore they live a peaceful life, and they are at rest. Whereas I live a life of pain. And then, at such time, a person wants to enjoy the life of this world, but he cannot satisfy himself with this as well. And although he sees that others do enjoy their lives, why must he have such a fate that he is not qualified to receive a life of satisfaction like others? Meaning, when he walks in the streets, he sees people who are running around for work or for to buy something or to study something, and they don't seem to be so suffering so much, but they're all happy. Why is it that I cannot see a good reason to have even in respect or livelihood, or even with people who have less money than I do, they don't suffer so much that they say that they need more pleasure in life. And I, for myself, feel less poignant taste in life, meaning that all the corporal pleasures don't give me that much pleasure to satisfy me. I'm not saying that if my corporal pleasures give me that much pleasure that I will pleasure that I will give it up. Because even a small thing that is worthless, you do not throw outside, but it is a concern. Why don't I feel that much pleasure as they do? And the truth is, if we picture it and say that I have 40% of corporal pleasure, then it can satisfy those people who satisfy for 40%. But for those people who have sometimes tasted a spiritual pleasure, and let's say that they already had 60% of pleasure, it is hard for them to get used to living on only 40% of pleasure. That is why everyone is happy, and they live a life of sorrow, because they need 60% of pleasure. But still, he doesn't throw away the pleasure, even if there's only 1% to it. That is why everyone who is greedy is angry. Meaning, although they receive pleasure like others do, but he is angry because he wants to find the measurement of pleasure of 60% that he had, that he's used to tasting in spiritual taste. But in corporeality, he's only allowed to enjoy with a minute light, as it says in the Holy Zohar, meaning a very small percentage of pleasure. That is why even when he's already dead, when he loses the taste of spiritual life, but when he remembers that he's used to tasting a higher percent of pleasure than he has in corporal pleasures, he feels regret and doesn't have mental satisfaction. And this is the matter of the maggot is hard on the dead as a needle for the living flesh. Meaning when he's dead and he remembers the taste of pleasure that he had when he had high spirits, called a maggot, like a needle in the living flesh, meaning when he was alive, and all his pleasure was only in Torah and work, and he felt taste in the work of devotion in order to bestow contentment to his Maker, and if some sin awakened in him, meaning a desire of the will to receive, then he had pains to death. And this is called like a needle in the living flesh, meaning when he was cleaved to life. Now, when he remembers the maggot, he is dead, and that gives him pain as well. But there's a rule that even that the dead is forgotten from the heart, meaning that he forgets that he ever had in his life. And now he's in a state of death, and he goes on with the flow of life of the general collective. And then he is no longer alive, living a life of sorrow, meaning that he comes to a situation that he forgets everything, and then he comes to a situation that the dead are free, meaning that he becomes free of all the commandments that he received from his rabbi, and he comes to a situation of forgetfulness, that he forgets that he ever had any kind of work. But he thinks that in this situation he's been all his life, and even that calculation he forgets to do, but he simply just goes on with the flow. As it turns out, that there are several situations until one holds the hose of life that revives all soul. The first is that he forgets to make any kind of calculation with his situation, current situation. The second is that he calculates for himself and sees that he is dead. And he remembers the time of the maggot and he feels pain. As it says that it is like a needle in the flesh, but then he is despaired. The fourth is that he calculates and sees that he is dead, but he gets the light of confidence and he strengthens himself and takes upon himself that from now on he will take only the path of work as mitigation. Five, during the work, meaning when he works in the mind and heart as much as he can, as whatsoever thy hand attendeth to do by thy hand, that do. And then he feels a taste in the study of the Kabbalah, although he doesn't understand the content of it, still he gets a shine and illumination during the study because of the light in it, and he feels a taste in the work above reason, and he feels a detachment that the will to receive causes him, and he wants to work only in bestowal until God has mercy on him and says to him, hello. As Baal HaSulam said, I will hear what God will speak, for he will speak peace unto his people and to his followers, and let them not turn back to folly. And indeed, we have to understand this great question, how we have been virtuous to hear the word of God from the Ari and Baal HaSulam, and we saw that nothing is concealed from him. And every time we had the privilege of surrendering to him with heart and soul, we already felt ourselves to be in the high spiritual air than any kind of nonsense of this world. How there was a reality that we remained in this situation, everyone according to his own degree, that each of us should have remained in a higher degree than he is right now. And this is explained in the Torah, that I've already explained to you the matter of the exodus of Israel from Pharaoh, and why if God wanted to take Israel out of the hand of Egypt, he needed the consent of Pharaoh, because after all, he's almighty. And I've explained that Pharaoh, meaning the body, that the body should love God with all thy heart, etc. And with love, it cannot be by coercion. And therefore, we should ask, since it is known that the work should be above reason, how did he show these omens to God, to Pharaoh? And furthermore, I asked, for I have hardened his heart, that I might show these my signs in the midst of them. And they asked, therefore he took away the choice from him, meaning, besides man's heart being evil from his youth, he added to it more hardening of the heart. Therefore, he had no possibility of choosing good and not choosing bad. But we should understand that, as Prophet Salam told us, that the foundation of our work should be in order to bestow. Whereas when there's an omen, then it is already hard to keep his work for her name, Lishma. And the most important is that I might show these my signs in the midst of them. That it is only above reason that it is difficult for his work to be Lishma. And the most important is that where there is room for the question of who is the Lord, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice. I'm sorry, I'll read this again. The most important is that where there is a question of who, in other words, who is the Lord that I should obey his voice, there is room for connection with these, that by the two of them you find God, because these, without the who, cannot exist, as it says in the introduction to the Zohar. And the most important is that we need the letters of the Torah to be revealed, that it is only for he who has Torah that it is the Torah that we need, because otherwise it is called that he gives his daughter to an ordinary person as though he forces him, meaning that death is certain if he does not have Torah. And Torah is called the middle line, meaning that it includes two things, meaning who and these, that both of them together in Hebrew and Hebrew letters, they form the word Elohim, God. Therefore, if a person begins to enter the work in truth, and he begins to feel a taste in the work, then there is already room to fail in the will to receive, meaning he already has the foundation of observing Torah and work, practicing Torah and work, because I feel in that a better taste than all the nonsense of this world. Therefore, there is no longer a need for faith above reason, because the sensation of pleasure already gives him a clear idea that it is worthwhile to be a servant of God. And if he is not given any taste in the work, then he cannot continue in the work, because it is difficult to continue in the work that is above reason. But you begin with Lo Lishma, not for her name. And afterwards you come to for her name, Lishma. And this order is as one teaches the baby to walk, when you hold him by the hand and you walk him. And once more. And when he begins to walk, then you let go of him. At first he falls, and then you strengthen him, and again he falls, and again. And so it goes, until he can already walk without support. And then it is called that he can work Lishma. And then he attains great many things, because he already knows how to behave with himself in order to bestow. Meaning, even though he receives a great many things now, because he has Torah, meaning that he had all that practice in Torah, how to behave so that his intent will be Lishma. And then begins the time that he is shown the secrets of Torah, which is the bounty that is given to the servants of God. And now we can understand the matter of the hardening of the heart that the Creator promised to Moses. Meaning that after all the miracles and the wonders, meaning even when we receive several kinds of gadlut, greatness, both in high spirits and in novelties of the Torah, still during the act we will have a wonderful impression from that, until we already decide that there is none else beside him, and that we should give ourselves only to serve the Creator. Therefore, you should not think that by that the place for work will be cancelled, as what man should discover, that man will immediately be nullified before his masters, and there is no longer room for choice, meaning what a person should discover, choose. To that, the Creator promised him that he can do something that you cannot understand, meaning if I harden his heart, because the Creator gives the hardening of the heart. Because immediately after all the omens and the revelations, he immediately forgets everything and has to begin his work anew. And if you ask, what do you need all these omens for if he forgets them? But during the omen, when he sees that it is worthwhile to be a servant of God, this is called a support. And it doesn't count for him, because it counts for the supporter. But still, he accustoms himself to walk, as it says as in the story of the baby. Therefore, even when we got to hear the words of God speaking from the mouth of Baal HaSulam, still the choice remains ours. Therefore, even though he told us so many revelations, that was only in order to guide us so that we can walk without support. Therefore, because of that, immediately with every revelation in Torah that he discovered to us, and the high spirits that we, and the confidence that we received to dedicate our days only for the Lord, but immediately comes on top of that the hardening of the heart, so that we have afterwards our own choice, because this is called the labor without the support, for I have hardened his heart, so that afterwards we will have our own choice. And this is called labor without support, because his intent was to bring us to the desired perfection. Therefore, because of that, everyone remains in a situation that is not worthy of his student. And we have to strengthen ourselves. As it says in my previous letter, that Jacob our father did not die, meaning that the attribute of truth lives forever. And that the verse shall be kept. Therefore, fear thou not, O Jacob, my servant, saith the Lord. Neither be dismayed, O Israel, for I will save thee from afar. And thy seed from the end of their captivity, from the land of their captivity. I read this again. Therefore, fear thou not, O Jacob, my servant, saith the Lord. Neither be dismayed, O Israel, for I will save thee from afar, and thy seed from the land of their captivity. Meaning, even if we are completely remote, then the salvation of God is in an instant, and we shall come to the truth, meaning to bestow contentment to our Maker. Rav's words. So Rabash says that if a person is already in adhesion, he only has to increase it and strengthen it. But if he doesn't have adhesion, he should recognize the evil, that the situation will seem far from him. And then it says that the salvation of God is in an instant. And then he should feel himself as that he must be saved, that he's in a desperate situation, and he's the opposite of holiness, and what does he need his life for if he lives like that? So in every situation, a person should find himself demanded that he needs the Creator in order to increase his adhesion, and that he depends on him. There are situations when he's under the influence of the Upper One, as he describes here, that they were with Baal HaSulam in his presence, and then he just worked on them, and they felt that they belonged to holiness, that they had some grip on it, and they received something from there. But then when he was gone physically, they saw that without his body, they couldn't hold on to him in spirituality. So they had a problem how to still. In spirituality, there is no difference if he's dead or alive, or any kind of detainments. But still, they were not able to perform any kind of correction. So they had a problem on the one hand. On the other hand, if you look at it as just the revelation of their actual situation, and it was which already existed before, in the same way, but they were held by the righteous. So now at least they know the evil, they know their own situation. So now they can pray, but to take themselves and understand that the situation is for their own good and advance on. That's what he writes. Questions? What is Olam Shana Nefesh, world, year, soul? Olam Shana Nefesh is, if I want to have contact with something, I have to feel it the way it is. What does that mean? I can feel it, a phenomenon, according to the equivalence of form. There's something outside of me. I don't know what it is. If I can hear, see, smell, feel, that's how I examine things. If I'm in a sea of upper light, I can feel it only according to the equivalence of form with it. The more my attributes resemble the upper light, the more I'll feel it. And then I'll measure the upper light according to my own correction. There in me, all in all, 620 desires, which are opposite to the light. Let's say that I corrected 10% of those desires, I feel 10% of the light that I'm in, this ocean. So I examine my situation and say that now I feel some kind of reality. What reality do I feel? I don't feel the light itself. I feel how it works on me. The difference between myself and the light, and the resemblance between me and him, or it, the head of the Patsuf, Rosh, versus the end, I get the inner light and feel my own situation. It's called Tamim, inner light. If I don't have that, I don't have any kind of situation. Any situation that I can feel has a light and vessel. Kachabzon and Naranchai. It has to be. There's no situation that's not included of that. So in order to come to that situation, you have to all in all be in a certain situation called Olam Shana Nefesh. Nefesh being the vessel itself. Shana is the situations, previous situations, the preparations, the shimot, and the screens that build the current situation. So we have Nefesh, Shana, and Olam. Olam, world, is when it is when I and the whole process that I concentrated in me, all the data, all the corrections, where they take me now. That's my world, Olam. in this matter of Olam, we also take into consideration the situation of the upper one. It can be an awakening from above or all kinds of things. Just like in this world. Olam is a place, world. Shana, year, is a certain situation in that place. Yes, time. What is time? Times change, yes? It might be the same place, but a different time. Time can be a light, darkness, a day, night. There are people, there aren't people there. And nefesh is my inner situation. Nefesh is soul. That I can perceive this time and place and process them. And those three factors create in me my sensation. If I don't have all three of them, I can't define my feeling. If I say that I feel and I understand my situation, then it is divided in me to nefesh, shana, olam. Nefesh being me, the one who feels, with my attributes and my preparations. Shana is the general situation, and olam is the external world that brings its situations on me. And then the encounter between the outside and the inside, there's an encounter so that we can talk about contact, about connection. It's called zivug, coupling. In every contact with reality, either in our world or in the spiritual world, you have these three things. Can't be any other way. Otherwise, you don't have enough data to build a sensation. He says in the article, the freedom that you have, externality, and the times that change, you have your own internality and your laws of development and how they influence one another creates your sensation, your situation. So every situation is your outside, your inside, and how you connect between them. And what is this connection between me and Ele, which together create the word God? Those are two parts of our body, Gagal Tainayim and Achap. Me is Gagal Tainayim, Ele is Achap, vessels of his toll, Ele is Achap, vessels of reception. And they have opposite work between them, opposite laws, and they have such desires that in Ele you have the desires of the vessels of reception that want to be satisfied. The arguments or the complaints of the vessels of bestowal are complaints about adhesion, and the complaints about the vessels of reception are complaints that they have to receive. It's a different kind of work. The contact between them is only the intent. They can be together only through the intention. How can creator and creature be together? They're completely opposite. Holiness and shell, how can they unite eventually? Light and vessel, how can they be together? It's like fire and water. only on condition that the intent unites them, nothing more. And the aim is the man in us, that the human in us, the creator two things, lights and vessels, and in between them, we make peace. In the first restriction, there's a separation between lights and vessels, that the vessels don't feel the lights, but only according to the equivalence of the intent, to the extent that the vessel resembles the light. Our whole work is to connect them, which is called Zivug Daka. There's nothing more than that. It's so simple. He writes that he gets himself used to walking. What does that mean? When the baby gets used to walking with the support of the big one, he writes that sometimes the baby can walk with the help of the upper one, and then he loses his support, and he has to compliment for it as though he has support from the upper one. He can walk if his mother is holding him. He can already stand on his own 2 feet, but he doesn't have the balance yet, and he can't make the steps. So she holds him by the hand, and then he can walk. Now she lets go of him. So he needs her hands. And that's what he has to complement. He has to be to receive the stability to be able to stand and walk without her support. There's complete congruence here. What are the hands of the mother? They're the hands of faith, Bina. She helps him walk above reason. That's why he holds on to himself. He holds on to himself in spirituality. When she lets go of him, he falls. You see how he immediately sits down. He doesn't want to move. He's incapable. Now, he has to complement for the above reason by himself to receive such strength like his mother is holding him, and then he'll receive into his vessels of reception. The vessels are the legs are the vessels of reception. If he doesn't feel that he's supported either by the mother in spirituality or by himself. So at first the mother gives him the vessels, and then he has to develop those vessels himself. The legs can only get used to walk provided they have support by the hands. So instead of the hands of the mother, which are called the force of Bina, or Ima, of the mother, instead of that, when he doesn't have it, he should gather such strength as though his mother is holding him. If he doesn't do it, he can't walk. He has to have them. When his mother lets go, he has to find those forces as though she's holding him. Each degree has to be an addition to the previous one. If he can walk without his mother, it's because he complimented for what the mother left him. Society can't give you. We say that society should support you instead of the mother. No, society can't give you anything but the need. Society can help you turn to the Creator. Society gives you the sensation of the greatness of the goal, that the goal is great, but it doesn't open it to you. It gives you a sensation that the goal is great, that it is worth, that the investment is worthwhile in order to attain it. But it doesn't bring it to you. Society can't give you spirituality. It can only give you desires that they have. society or people like you. They don't have any kind of revelation. They're like you in the same situation. And through them, you increase your vessel. And besides that, you also direct it correctly, accurately to the goal. That's what society does. Don't think that in society you'll find the Creator. He's not there. By uniting with your friends, you will not discover the Creator. It is the personal work of each and every one of us. By nullifying ourselves before our friends, we nullify our will to receive. Society helps you only to do it. It is a supporting tool. You will not find spirituality there. You will find strength, vessels, preparations, by which you will discover spirituality. Spirituality is the Creator. What does it mean that I give up on my own will to receive? I have, now, an awakening from above. It's called a point in the heart. This point is small. It's not enough to attain spirituality. If it were, I could attain it right now. Say, when did you wake up? A year ago, right? A year and a half. Okay, you're already behind. Why? I'll tell you. I'm behind too. Why am I not at the end of correction? I'm in the middle there, somewhere. Why not at the end? Because the minute I got the desire, why can't this desire be the first and the last? Why not? There shouldn't be any time here. What's missing is the desire that I got from above, but I will not get any more than this point. Even when I'm awakened afterwards, I'm also awakened from this one point, what we call in Kabbalah terms, that Zon Datsilut is in the constant situation, Zalan Pin in Vak and Malachut in Nekuda. For us, it's not even a point. If we're at this point of Malachut, but when we receive a point. That's what it's called. It's called a part of God above. Why God? Because Bina, the Creator, Zalan Pin, called the Creator, Malachut, clings to it. This Eret, to its Chazeh. And those two points are standing at the Parsa, and from there they give me this illumination, meaning to all my desires, that this illumination is called the point in the heart. That's it. I have to build myself above this point with my own effort. Everything besides this point is my own effort. The Creator can't give it up. He can't build it for me. It has to be my effort, my desire, completely me. The complete tensiot, besides this point, I have to collect it, attain it, I don't know, do whatever I can. The Creator can't work for me, otherwise I won't feel the taste, I won't feel my own reality in spirituality, it'll not be me. If it's He who gives it to me, I'll be like a fetus, like an embryo. It'll be like my roots. But I want to be more than my roots. In order to be more than a root, He gives me a hip of will to receive, that I still can't see it, but now I begin to work with it. What's the difference between my current situation and my situation in En Sof? That in En Sof, I'm in a point. And the difference between my current situation and En Sof is that this point received an addition, a big ball of or a circle, never mind, a big ball of desires. It's called the heart, And this point is called the point in the heart. So I received this edition. And this, I don't even know this edition. It's the whole edition of Ein Sof. And now I have to process this edition for this point. Rav is drawing. We are at Ein Sof, the first situation. There's a circle and a point inside it. This is the light of Ein Sof, and this is Malchut. That's the first situation. Now, Malchut restricts itself so that it doesn't feel the light of Ein Sof. Now it becomes a vacant place. That's the second situation. Now, our situation, the third situation, is when Malchut, that point, and the desires around it, in Ein Sof, they are the upper nine, they begin to connect with one another. How? Malchut begins to shine a little bit, and the upper nine begin to shine on Malchut. It is then awakened. And then, that's already number three. That's person awakening. The point is now revealed. And then, the work, when this Malchut has to contact, as much as it suppresses itself, restricts itself, and contacts the desires of the upper nine, by that it expands itself until it increases itself, enlarges itself back to Ein Sof. Try and imagine it this way. Now, in order to describe the situation, describe how we connect to Ein Sof, we call that situation kav, line. I connect to the desires outside of me. That's called my patsuf. This area where I feel is called my world. Something like that. So what are the desires outside of me? What are the souls or what? They are my heart. The desires outside of me. Everything in this vacant place here in the second situation, that's my heart. I perform the first restriction on myself and I acquire the first nine. I begin to work with the desires with my external desires or desires outside of me. Try and picture it this way. What does it mean? Restriction. That I understand that these desires are not my own. That you tell me. We say that Keter relates to Malchut through Malchut. And then we say that Malchut relates to Keter also through the Tet Rishonot. So do we have them twice or what? You adopt those upper nine. You relate to them. You take them how the same way the Creator relates to you. He relates to you through the point in the heart, through your other desires, who are, so to speak, your own, and you begin to take the desires in your heart through the point in the heart to relate back to Him. So what's the fourth situation that Malchut turns to Him through those desires? he gives me an example how he relates to me and I relate to him that way. We don't have many desires, just one, that ends off that point that I have, that point in itself is divided into many other points. Just to, let's say, 600,000 points. And it also takes a different kind of shape. It all comes from the structure of the first man. When Malchut was connected with the upper nine, it broke, and then it was broken to 600,000 pieces, and the upper nine entered them, and it began to see that it related to them or didn't relate to them. Before that, there was no contact. What does it mean that those desires awaken Malchut? All other desires, besides the point in the heart, are not my own. They are the first. They're the first three aspects, or the upper nine. It's how the Creator wants me to feel Him. That's how He wants me to relate to Him. That's how He wants me to feel reality. It's how He created me to use egoistically the reality. The upper nine is today my upper nine is just my desires, my 620 desires. Then I begin to discover them and correct them. Then I come to the circle of Ein Sof. The process, your process, is to fill up this Ein Sof with light by equalizing with it to the point that the point equalizes with the light. This space will be filled. How? Until the end of correction, it will only be filled with one line. Instead of with a whole line. The difference between the whole circle and the line is that the vessels of reception in the Chab de Aliyah is like a line compared to the whole circle, which are the vessels of reception, but you correct it because by not using it, because you want to be in adhesion with the Creator where you can, and with your other desires you just don't use. So why can't the first desire not be the last desire? Because you need all the observations. You get a desire called a point in the heart. It's not your own. Now you have to increase it to serve for all the upper nine. If we could immediately feel in the desire that we got for spirituality, the desire of all the shells, all the klipot, that I just love it. The shells love the Creator in order to receive. But it's love. Yes. We in our world, it's also called love. When I love something, I enjoy it. So if we could at least go to the klipot, at least, from the point in the heart, when I have some desire for spirituality, so I increase it all the way, then I would go into the shells all the way, and we wouldn't be able to exit them. And we can't go into wholeness immediately. I have to correct the will to receive by myself, to want equivalence of form, and ask for help from above to have this equivalence of form. It turns out that I'm always given a little bit more of a will to receive, to the extent that I can still, on top of it, come to a situation where it is more, that it is worthwhile for me to receive a desire to bestow. But my demand has to be at the end of correction all the time. I shouldn't care about the degrees. I don't know about them. Every time I get something, it's as though I get something from Ein Sof. In my head, there is always Ein Sof. I have to come to that, and that's it. It's called that a person should expect the Messiah every day. Who says that every degree has to be like that? So without, in any case, I can't see anything more than my adjacent degree. And so far is only what I can see in my head. But for me, that's the best possible thing. I can't describe anything more than that anyhow. When I attain that and acquire it, I then begin to see that what I thought of wasn't that what I thought of and so turns out to be worthless until I'm fed up with it and begin to want the next degree. That's the oppositeness between degrees. Society helps me strengthen my will to receive, my will for the Creator, in two ways. To show me that my current situation is on the face, and there's no better than being in contact with the Creator, connected with Him. That's what I get should get from society, and that should give me the urge. But it is I who get it. The Creator awakens me, and I, through this awakening, add strength from society on top of what He gives me. I increase these what He gives me until it becomes a prayer. Why? Because my society is the other parts in the point of the first man. They're kind of representatives of all the other desires that the Creator created besides myself. It can be five people. And there can be billions outside. And who knows how many souls don't have a body yet. See, let's describe it theoretically. Although we'll see afterwards that these pictures are fictitious. When I picture society, I should picture it like a collective vessel. That if I bond with it, I come to enough desires with which I can turn to the light, and I begin to contact with the light. It works on me, and I begin to connect with it. When I prefer to contact with a group, although my desires are turned toward me, I'm willing to live in their problems, in their troubles, in their desires. It is called that I'm beginning to restrict myself. But when I get from them the high spirits, the uplift toward the Creator, it is still egoistic. The real restriction will come afterwards. But that's already an exit from my self point. This is called lo lishma. It is when I'm willing to give up on my own point toward everyone, toward the whole world. I'm willing to do whatever you want with me, just give me the Creator. That's called lo lishma. Lo lishma is a great concession that I have to make, but it is an egoistic one. It's like a guy wanting a girl. I don't care about anything in the world, just her. What are you going to do? We gave us this example in life. It's a root and branch. If a person doesn't have a point in the heart and he asks, what's the meaning of my life? And this desire, this question, what is the meaning of my life? It's not a question, why did I lose money in the stock market or something, or why did I not come to, got this pretty woman, or didn't get any money, or didn't get any respect, I didn't get my high position or something, or didn't gain control, or that I don't know, I'm not smart enough or something. If behind all these things he continues on and he's not satisfied with what he gets, it just becomes not important, unimportant, and he moves on, it's a sign that he wants the Creator. So what do I do with these desires? You don't let go of them. They help you build the right desire for the Creator. Those desires support you. They're never gone. None of them are gone. They all support you. But the question is, how far does your desire get? I don't understand you. There are. Love is drawing. This is my heart. And that's the point of the heart. There's a circle and a point inside it. My heart leads to physical pleasures, money, respect, and knowledge. And then you have the point in the heart, and it reaches farther than all that, to the Creator. I don't know Creator. I know one thing. This and this and this and that, all the other desires that sometimes satisfy me, I don't need them. They're just not in my mind. I need this. Why? I don't know. What is it? I don't know. But that's just the way it is. It's a desire. Desire doesn't need an answer. You have a desire, and you have the satisfaction for it. You don't need it. There's no explanation. The reasoning comes afterwards, only to attain it. So if you have that point, we can talk to you. If not, there's no talking anyhow. So if you have it, you have to increase it. How? For society. How do I add all these desires? How do I add all these desires to the desires of the Creator? I don't know. I know that I want Him. I have to be. I feel that I have to be the most important, the most, the greatest, the richest, whatever. And only when I have those, I continue on and I come to the Creator. You don't need to worry about any of the other desires except the point in the heart, because you don't know how they should connect in order to do all kinds of things. They will awaken for this or for that according to the root of your own soul. You will suddenly, there will be a time when you'll begin to want something in life besides the work of God. You will want to have an important, a big job. Now you're laughing at it, but you'll see. You don't have to restrict anything. If you're working on any kind of desire besides the desire for the Creator, you're inside that desire. That's not good. You have to always be concerned about increasing the point in the heart, enlarging it. And the other desires, they will either support it or fall. That's not your concern. And don't tend to all the other desires. You'll never come out of there. It's not our work. That's why a person is always examined according to his necessity for that. He can be a complete villain. But he has a desire for the Creator along with it or not. And the guys that that we suspended wanted control more than the point in the heart. A lot of people, for example, like to work for the government. They like to be close to the power. That's why those people were suspended. Maybe tomorrow they'll come out of it. But in the meantime, I don't see it. That's why I don't regret. It's just though I never lost anyone. Now, I examined precisely his desire. I saw that it wasn't going to the Creator, so they shouldn't be here. I don't see in those 20 people that they that through those desires they go to the Creator. There are other such people here who are not getting to the Creator unless they attach themselves to the group. But with those guys, it was just obvious, a final clarification that it'll never turn out. Say, in 6 months or in a year, something happens. Yes, I'm not interfering with Providence this way. They can put a person in all kinds of situations and confuse him for 6 months or for a year. For all kinds of situations. I'm just saying that a person for himself can't see anything. He can't know anything. It says simply that a fool is not shown something half done. What does it mean that you're a fool, that you can't see the end? Yes, you can't see the final outcome. So how can you, so you're confused, you don't know what it's for, where it's leading, how my situation can turn out into anything good, you don't know, you're in the middle. You don't see true or false situations according to the final outcome. You identify them according to if it's above reason or below reason, by nullification towards society or not. That's it.